Blog Talk Radio.
Evil minds that plot destruction, sorcerer of death construction, in the fields of bodies burning, as the war machine keeps turning, death and hatred to mankind. Wash my hands. Oh, Lord, yeah.
Everybody, it's Monday night, and that means it's time for the Constitution Hour. I'll be your host, Ron Golden, patriotfamilies.com. That's patriotfamilies with a YS.com. We got a couple of family members in the chat room and another longtime listener to the show, Mr. FT. Want to just throw a little shout out to everybody, and I see I've got Robert on the line. Robert, I'll pick you up in a minute. I really wanted to ask a question tonight, starting out the show, before I get into the other things that I have rolling around in my head, the various marbles that are cascading through the hallways of my empty skull. And I suppose the question is, what do you want? What is it you want? Not what everybody else wants. What do you want? I know many of us talk about restoring the Constitution, you know, restoring America, retaking America, rebuilding America. Have you stopped to consider what that would look like? If you were the supreme dictator, what would your America look like? What is it you would do? That would be nice, but whose version of it? Rod Luke said the Constitution upheld. But whose version? And how do we restore values? If individuals don't have their own individual values, how do we restore values to a nation that is not at all what was created under our Constitution? I think we can all agree, or we should all be able to agree, that what was created by the Constitution was a federal government. Not a national government. Not even, quite honestly, a central government. Central, national, just different ways of saying the same thing. So my question is, what would that look like? How would it be implemented? What powers would that federal government have? Would they be able to dictate to you what you can drink, what you could smoke, what you could eat, whom you could marry? I think not. But I think we really we get into the fervor, as it is, of Constitution. But I think all too often, we may not fully comprehend exactly what that means. And how do we envision this America, this utopian constitutional republic that we envision? That's really what I'm asking. And I know there is no such thing as utopia. There is no Eden. I don't have a sister, Rod, but if I did, I'm pretty certain I wouldn't want to marry her because she'd be an obstinate female. Most of them are. Some are more obstinate than others. And if she's my blood relative, you can rest assured that she'd be very obstinate. Not to mention she'd be far too smart and I wouldn't be able to manipulate her in any way. Oh, but seriously, you know, the government shouldn't be in the business of legislating marriage, period. Marriage is a religious thing. Marriage is a union between a man and a woman before God. Now, if you want to involve your family, I think that's appropriate. But it's certainly not an appropriate role for government. Ever. Not even state government. Not even your county government. Not even your township or your neighborhood. Not even your pastor. It's not up to him. It's between you and your spouse and God. But I just wanted to kind of throw that out there and give you guys a little food for thought. I think the union of marriage between a man and a woman must be respected by your community. And if it's not, if someone tries to have relations with your wife, then I think you're perfectly within your right to dispatch the situation. But I don't want to get too far afield. I'm reading a very interesting book right now, and one that's relatively inexpensive. It's under $15, and it's just, well, 213 pages or so if you take the index and the footnotes and whatnot. The book is A Century of War, Lincoln, Wilson, and Roosevelt by John V. Denson. Mr. Denson is a former lawyer and a former federal judge. And it's a shame that he is former and not current, because we certainly could use more true patriotic Americans in our justice system that have the mindset of this very well-spoken man. And the reason I mention the book is because it's absolutely appropriate and pertinent to our current situation. And, you know, years ago when 9/11 happened, and I had some questions as to the reality of the official story, you know, I've heard a lot of things over the years, and people have said, you really believe that the government could just murder 3,300 of its own citizens? Well, not only do I think they could, they have. And done much worse. They've murdered tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, without batting an eye, for reasons other than why we have a military to begin with, our constitutional republic. We're to have a military for defense, in case we've been attacked. And you know, the sad thing is that we were attacked. You know, we were attacked in Pearl Harbor. And who can deny that? You know, who can deny that we were attacked at Pearl Harbor, and we, of course, had to respond. We couldn't let that go unanswered. But what if we found out that the attack on Pearl Harbor was not only avoidable, but it was orchestrated? What if we knew that our naval forces were commanded not to be anywhere near the Pacific route that would be most favorable to travel between Japan and Hawaii? Pearl Harbor. What if we knew that our naval administration had undertaken a study in 1932 and came to the conclusion that the one place we were vulnerable would be a naval attack on Pearl Harbor. I want to read you a couple of small excerpts, and of course, there were several things going on, and it's much better to read the whole thing in context, but truly, we were not allowing our Pacific Fleet or any of our naval vessels anywhere near. Well, it does really matter as to the outcome, Rod. Of course, now it's all just water under the bridge, but the deaths of tens of thousands of Americans could have been avoided. In fact, had we not been involved in World War I, World War II would never have happened. But as it was, we got involved at the insistence of Great Britain. And it was clearly, on the British end of things, a commercial enterprise. They were worried about Germany encroaching on their commercial enterprises. Let's see, Navy officials declared the North Pacific Ocean a, quote, vacant sea, and ordered all U.S. and Allied shipping out of the waters. An alternate trans-Pacific route was authorized through the Torres Strait in the South Pacific between Australia and New Guinea. Rear Admiral Richard K. Turner, War Plans Officer for the United States Navy in 1941, explained the reasoning with a startling admission. We were prepared to divert traffic when we believed that war was imminent. We sent the traffic down via Torres Strait so that the track of the Japanese task force would be clear of any traffic. On November 25th, the day that the Japanese carrier force sailed for Pearl Harbor, Navy headquarters sent this message to Kimmel and San Francisco's 12th Naval District. Route all trans-Pacific shipping through Torres Strait. SINPAC and SINCAF provide necessary escort. Refer to your dispatch. What I'm trying to explain to you is that despite what you might believe about World War II and Pearl Harbor, your government, and in particular your President Roosevelt at the time, committed treason. They sacrificed the men in our naval forces at Pearl Harbor so that they would have an appropriate excuse to go to war. And I don't know about you, and I don't know about what could have been and what might have been, but ladies and gentlemen, that's treason. And it was the same reasoning that Abraham Lincoln used to resupply Fort Sumner. He wanted the South to fire the first shot so that he could claim to be the defender and not the aggressor. And haven't we seen that time and again? The Gulf of Tonkin event in Vietnam. Didn't we hear about weapons of mass destruction that never materialized in Iraq? Aren't we today hearing about sarin gas being used? Oh, and you're right, Rod. Japan did send that fleet to attack us. Of course, we knew that Japan only had about enough oil to run about a year. And Japan had been reaching out to the U.S. For peace before the war ever started. But that didn't suit the British and U.S. agenda. Hitler certainly didn't want war with the U.S. So I think maybe, you know, our history can get a little skewed because we don't always get the true history. I'm going to bring in Mr. Robert. I believe that's Mr. Robert. Robert, how are you, sir?
I'm hanging in there. That's no hidden secret, Ron. They've been doing that for years.
Well, that's kind of my point, Robert.
They've been causing war because the only reason why they go to war is because the economy is bad. Now, well, the economy, you know that. I mean, that's the only reason why they do it.
The
population is overloading, you know. It's so big agenda. They've been doing that for years, but now it's coming to the point where they don't even blink an eye. They just go ahead and do it. They don't even do it about, you know, look what's going on in Syria right now. I mean,
well,
right now,
it's the ultimate trickle down economic plan, right?
Sure. It's horrible. It's terrible.
I mean, the government taxes the crap out of you. You go buy some war bonds, go work to support the war effort, send all the able-bodied men over to get killed, thin out the herd, and some of that tax money that went into the government trickles down into your paycheck.
Sure.
It's a great racket.
It is a racket. It's a wonderful racket. It's a matter that now it's the question is, it's called the survival of the fittest now. That basically, it's just the survival of the fittest. Who's going to survive?
Well,
I don't know the answer to that, Ron. No one does.
I find it interesting that, you know, some time ago we had this article come up, and out of the UK, BBC News, this was May 6th, where Carla Del Ponte, a member of the UN, said that the rebels, the Syrian rebels, had used sarin gas in an attempt to blame it on Assad. Really?
The bottom line, I mean, that happened in Vietnam, Ron. You don't know who the hell you're fighting. That's the problem. You didn't even know who
you're
fighting.
I had that on my program a while back. During the Vietnam War, our Congress was sending supplies to our enemy.
Yeah.
And those supplies were showing up in the battlefield.
I don't know anymore, Rod. I mean, if I was president, how would it be? I don't know how I would run the government. I wouldn't know how to run the government. The government's supposed to run by itself, but it never does.
That's like this story about the 1070 plan, right? That Detroit and other governments could implement the 1070 plan and save themselves, you see. Give all the workers a 10% pay cut and raise their retirement age to 70. And, you know, the article, the plan goes on to say that, you know, back in the 60s, when people would retire at 65, you know, hell, they'd only live to be 67 anyway. So it was only a couple of years, so it wasn't like you really had to pay out. So just move the goalpost and make it so that, you know, by the time you collect retirement from Social Security, you'll be dead in a year. What the hell does it matter? It's going to save us a ton of money.
Well,
but whatever happened to the idea that government wasn't supposed to be run at a profit and government, I mean, you know, government service was supposed to be that. It was supposed to be civil service, not a way to make $200,000 a year and get permanent military or permanent benefits.
Well, let's put it this way, Ron. If welfare recipients are making $38,000 a year, you know what that means? I'm only living off $7,600 a year.
We on Rod Luke put in Rod Luke put in talking about Vietnam. He said that he doesn't believe that our military lost that war in Vietnam. Well, I agree, but I don't believe they were ever supposed to win it.
No, they were supposed to be in there. They were supposed to be in there.
We should never have been there. And we shouldn't be involved in Syria right now.
That was a manufactured war. That was a worthless war.
Which one wasn't?
Yeah, they're all manufactured, you know, but...
Precisely.
You know,
we can look at someone that's a horrible piece of crap, like Adolf Hitler. Right?
I thought you were going to say me.
No. We can look at a guy like Hitler, and it's easy to hate somebody like that because he was evil. My God, Robert, was Stalin any less evil?
Stalin was just bad. They were all bastards.
Okay, but so how do we end up as a country choosing sides, the lesser of two evils, with Stalin and communism? And, I mean...
We can't do sides because we're becoming like them. That's my point.
You cannot go around picking sides in foreign entanglements and not become like the thing that you claim to be fighting. That's why our founders were very clear. George Washington was very clear in his farewell address about what our foreign policy should be. But you see, I'm here to tell you that the foreign policy of the United States since its inception has been less than honorable, shall we say. Now, that doesn't mean that the men and women serving in uniform, the guys out in the field, I'm not saying that they're less than honorable. The vast majority of them are damn fine people. They're bad ones, just like and persuasion. But for the most part, our men and women in the military are there because they believe in something bigger than themselves. They believe in something that is idea. And that's why I asked at the opening of the show, what does this America look like that you envision? This thing that you want to fight for. What does it look like? Because I don't believe we've ever seen it. Not in my lifetime. Not in your lifetime. It was always, you know, the thing hoped for but never seen.
Well, the principle of the
idea. Yeah, it's a principle. You're exactly right. It's the principle.
Yeah, but the principle
was derailed. It's been derailed. It's been bastardized. To the point where, you know, these poor guys go over and they, you know, they believe in their hearts that they're fighting for their country and their freedom and the liberties of others, and, you know, that fight for your right to say terrible things about the country. When in fact, you know, if you really get down to brass tacks, they're fighting for some corporate bullcrap.
I mean, seriously,
it's just like I talked about the politicians, the military uniforms. There ought to be some kind of international law that they have to wear their sponsorship patches. Just like NASCAR. Can you imagine?
So
Miss Linda, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. I was still muted, but I was laughing because that's hysterical. Good one. Yeah,
I mean, wouldn't it
be
easier to tell? You know, at least then the guys could go out and look and say, well, this is crap. This isn't
what I'm fighting
for.
I know you brought Washington. I know Thomas Jefferson felt the same way. I just don't happen to have his stuff right in front of me. But I do have Washington. He has this particular tome has just page after page of all of his. It's like alphabetical what he wrote about, thought about on different subjects. And this one is foreign relations, a policy of neutrality. And he says, I hope the United States of America will be able to keep disengaged from the labyrinth of European politics and wars. It should be the policy of the United States to administer to other nations' wants without being engaged in their quarrels. And it is not in the ability of the proudest and most potent people on earth to prevent us from becoming a great and respectable and commercial nation if we shall continue united and faithful to ourselves. And that was a letter to Sir Edward Newenham. So that's just one. I mean, he's got tons of stuff in here on this, on his ideas about it.
Hey, Doc.
And the entanglement.
Doc dropped in
mm-hmm.
for us. I was just
Pardon?
Saying hello to Doc. Doc dropped into the chat with us.
Awesome. Hey, Doc. Hey, Robert. Yeah,
hey,
so,
Linda. How you doing?
Hanging in there. Yeah, there's just a ton of avoiding entangling alliances. It's just, you know, I don't want to read the whole thing, but there's, like I said, if you guys, this one is The Real George Washington, and it's really good. One of my favorite books that I've ever read. So.
And you see, to me, the entangling alliance,
uh-huh.
leads to things like what I was talking about in this book with Roosevelt. Imagine that you are the president and you have direct information
mm-hmm.
from more than one source. It's November 25th.
Right.
Okay. And
yeah, I had read somewhere and. 2 years back, even before you were going to do this, but he knew what was going on.
It's more than he knew, and he's not the only one that knew. Do you realize what was the newest ship that was damaged in Pearl Harbor?
The Arizona? No.
27 years old.
Oh God, I can't remember. Been reading too much lately. Go ahead.
The portion of the Pacific Fleet that was destroyed at Pearl Harbor was the oldest part of our naval fleet. The best ships, the newest ships of the Pacific Fleet, had been moved out of Pearl Harbor and sent to Midway.
Oh, they knew.
Now, he knew long before that day. And
well,
here's the thing.
You know,
the Japanese sent an emissary to Washington to speak to the president. And he knew that too, because we had broken their code, not only their diplomatic
mm-hmm.
code, but also their military code. And the Japanese sent cables out and they said if they were not able to get a peace agreement with the United States by a certain date. They had no option. They could see no way around it. They were going to have to attack the U.S. Okay. Roosevelt went out of his way to make that happen. And when they sent an ambassador to the Capitol or to the White House, he told them, piss off. He didn't want anything to do with it. I'm not talking to him. Buzz off.
Wow.
And it said in the book, they said that as the Japanese storm began to gather force in the Pacific, the most private communications between the Japanese government and its ambassadors were being read in Washington. Army and Navy cryptographers had broken the Japanese diplomatic cipher and were reading messages that foretold the attack.
Wow.
The British had sent word that a Japanese fleet was steaming toward East Hawaii. You couple that with the fact that your damn naval department comes out and says, clear the way. We don't want anybody accidentally running across this giant fleet of Japanese ships headed to Pearl Harbor because they might get a heads up before the
wow.
desired outcome occurs.
Jesus. Yeah, it's just,
That's
it's
why
so
no entangling alliances, and it all had to do with the frickin' Milner Group. And I don't know if you're familiar with the Milner Group.
No.
Cecil Rhodes?
Oh, okay. Okay, the other book's not in front of me, and it probably didn't go into detail. But no, you can go, yes, this is talking about money. It all comes back to the money. These
yep.
people are obsessed with mammon. And remember when the decision to sink the Lusitania, which was not a passenger ship as we thought, was
correct.
Done by Churchill because he didn't want Britain to have to sue for peace. That was one of the reasons. You know, and it was all about money and standing. It just dang. God.
I mean, you know, the Lusitania is bad enough. There were, 150 Americans on board?
Well, that was on purpose, and that thing was outfitted
sure.
as a warship from the get-go. They lied about everything.
It was hauling munitions. We knew that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But it was it was designed for that. It was, you know, this quasi-passenger ship. What a load. Please.
But look, it was sent as a lamb to a slaughter.
Yep, absolutely. And it was Mandel House was right in there, you know, pushing for it.
Stroking old Woodrow's ego.
Oh, sure. Mm-hmm.
Told him he'd
be
the savior of the world, you know, the world would bow at his feet because
God.
He'd be the one that saved the world from
He really was the combination of a Cass Sunstein and a Valerie Jarrett of his day. I mean, this is the way I looked at it when I was reading this stuff. Absolutely. The puppet master. And not a good person. So, and poor stupid Wilson. Yeah, you know, sometimes I wonder. I think that they not only choose these clowns because of the color of their skin, but because of their idiocy and their gumbiness that they can be malleable. Jeez.
I think it's the narcissistic personality in them.
Well, yeah, that's the cult of personality as well. I agree, but my God.
They're easily manipulated when you stroke that ego.
Right. That's why we call them Gumby. See, in the dance world, if you're flexible, you're Gumby. Oh, don't get me started. People, it's crazy. No, I agree with you. And I think your original question is, what would it look like if you had, you know, your way? In other words, if you had free reign to do so. I said this on my show last week, the week before. I had a huge list of the alphabet soup agencies, and that'd be my start. Those guys would be gone. Anything that wasn't in the original intent of that Constitution would be so far gone, it would be in a shredder, in a heartbeat. That would be number one, and a few people would be in jail, too. But that's just me. So.
It's absolutely insane. And I found a great YouTube video that if anybody cares to watch it, I was going to download it and play it. It's only about 6 minutes long.
Okay.
But I'm not the only one that's calling BS on the whole Snowden thing.
Oh, wow. Cool.
So,
yeah, I haven't seen anything on him lately.
I'm glad to know I'm not alone. But, you know, basically what the guy in the video is pointing out is what I've said all along. What the hell has Snowden divulged that you didn't already know? I mean, seriously,
right.
Or that wasn't already knowable prior to his divulging it. You can go back and do Google searches going back to 2000, 01, 02, 03, and find reams of this crap. It's not like
whole,
he shattered some secret envelope.
Right. This is here's the thing. What we see in any form of it, whether it's radio, TV, newspaper, that's going on out there, this is theater, and you know it. This is the screen in Plato's cave. That's all you're allowed to see. And it goes on 7/24. This is what's happening. We are so propagandized, indoctrinated, Pravdaized. How many decades has it been going on?
I am going to totally shift gears for just a second here.
Go ahead.
Okay. Because this is something you and I have spoken about, and you've made mention a couple of times, you know, just in jest. Over here in Norcross, Georgia, Norcross PD fighting crime by predicting it.
Oh, my God.
Norcross, with the help of new technology, the Norcross Police Department is now predicting where crimes are most likely to happen. And thus far, doing it well. On Friday, the department officially went live with PredPol, Predictive Policing Software, a cloud-based technology that, in sort of layman's terms, uses police data, advanced mathematics, and complex algorithms to determine small areas most likely to be the home to crime during a particular time window. Shortly after the software was put into action, officers were patrolling such an area and caught two burglars inside a house. Not bad for the first patrol by the department first using the technology. It goes on to talk about Grogan crawled, the software, another tool, but a good one. The goal isn't for officers to spend, the next 12 hours in that box, Grogan said, but rather to spend 10 or 15 minutes. I was looking to see that Grogan said he believed Atlanta police and others in the region were considering implementing it. PredPol was developed by PhD mathematicians, criminologists, and social scientists who were working in conjunction with the Los Angeles and Santa Cruz police departments in California. Authorities there and in Seattle, among other places, have implemented the technology.
Of course.
I feel safer already.
I got to send you those. If I can find them, I'll get them to you by email. It's called the Big Sandy Chute. They've got some place, I'm not sure where it is, but out in the middle of nowhere, and they've got, like, Gatling guns and all these little really cool machine guns that they practice shooting. And one of the guys on Facebook was saying, well, if they want a race war, they better know what they're going to be up against. And he posted these YouTube ones. I'll give them to you. They're hysterical. I'm like, well, you know, some of the good old boys, they're not playing.
Well, that's true. And, you know, this goes back to another one that, you know, you and I had talked about and I've talked about on my show previously. What in the Sam Devil, there is more ads on this stupid thing than I can shake a stick at. Now, this goes back to March.
Okay.
On Thursday, March 23rd, 2013, on Thursday, Terry M. Hestelo, a retired Army officer with nearly 30 years of service under his belt, as well as combat experience in both Vietnam and Afghanistan, issued a dire warning to all Americans. The following warning was posted on his Facebook page. I fully intend to address this in far greater detail within days, but ask yourself, with all the law enforcement available in the United States, who is the DHS preparing to declare war on inside the United States? With the massive purchases of almost 3,000 new armored vehicles, MRAPs, and 1.6 billion rounds of ammunition with associated weapons, who in the U.S. do they intend to kill? Short answer, you and me.
You and, yep.
Anyone they think is standing in their way to impose a new Marxist government. Anyone who stands for the U.S. Constitution. We must demand that our representatives stand firm and immediately enforce, by law if necessary, the DHS to turn over their arsenal of war-making equipment to the Department of Defense. Nothing justifies this massive arms buildup of an agency whose jurisdiction is internal within the United States of America. They are preparing to go to war against American citizens.
Right. So who was writing to whom on this? Who was that addressed?
He was just writing on his Facebook page to American citizens. And he's Captain Terry M. Hestelo, United States Army retired. And he says, don't wait on people like John McCain or Lindsey Graham to recognize the threat. And boy, there's an understatement.
Yeah. Oh, those two clowns. My God. Oh, man. That's the chicken in the hen house. Oh,
well,
and
you
the in the hen house.
McCain said we should attack Syria immediately. So I think a stand down is definitely in order. I mean, just his say-so. That guy is the biggest freaking war hawk idiot.
What
I've ever seen.
The man is beyond. He belongs in a rubber room alongside Harry Reid. I'm telling you, I can't take those people anymore. And that Lindsey Goober Graham's another one. Oh my God, useless.
Him and Graham and Lieberman. They ought to do is tie them all in a damn chair at a table with those really long spoons. You remember that?
Yes. Yes.
And the only way they could keep from starving to death is to feed each other. They'd all die.
Yeah,
they would all die
for
of starvation.
Sure. Oh, my God. That's hysterical. Ooh, can I put as many people as I want at that table? Oh, I've got a list a mile long. Oh, God.
I mean, I don't think McCain shut his mouth long enough to chew, but that's just me.
Yeah, he's something else.
I can't believe you said that today. My jaw
he's
dropped.
He's a freaking moron.
He is. He's a complete schmuck. I can't believe any of them. And, I mean, we've got 535, not to mention the other, you know, and then the higher-ups who are running it. And we've got Bernanke and whoever else is in charge of that mess. And the IMF and the, you know, they're just evil. It goes all the way to the World Central Bank and all the rest of it. European Central Bank. Oh, my God. The Rothschilds, it's nuts. They're loony bins running this planet right now. But
well, and, you know, you remember. That, look, I'll play you. I'm going to play this clip again because I think it's worth listening to, and I've got to find it. But, I mean, you know, we were told before that this was going to be the deal. And we knew or should have known that Syria was in the mix.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
The crosshairs. Oh, yeah. Well, now, who's besides, I mean, I know that the conehead in chief is a puppet. So what's to be gained by this besides, I mean, are they just going to, well, they print money anyway. I don't understand what's to be gained by it. By entangling further. It's stupid.
The only thing I can tell you, the whole thing as far as the Middle East is concerned from where I sit has got to be geared around, number one, I think, around the Saudis and what they want.
Right.
Versus
what
the Iranians.
Why can't we tell them to go, why do they have, why can't we not tell the Saudis to pound sand? I don't understand
that.
Well,
because they hold our dollar in the balance. And, you know, come September, that may not matter.
The dollar doesn't mean shit anymore. It has no value.
It never really did. That's really why that the whole dollar value thing, that's really what prompted me to ask that question at the outset. What does that look like? What does that America look like? To you personally, I mean, really take stock in what is it you want? Is it really freedom that you want, or is it commercialism? Is it all the toys,
I would like what I think the original intent was, Ron, and that was that idea that was in the Declaration. And subsequently with people like Jefferson and even Franklin, I'm not talking about Hamilton because he was a mercantile guy, so I don't like him. But I even think Washington had it right. I mean, they knew what barter was. They knew what real money was. They just didn't put it down. They
Absolutely.
Oh, man.
But then you look at something like, you know, Shay's Rebellion. Or the whiskey rebellions, you know, and then you got to kind of scratch your head and say, well, wait a minute, you know, you guys were all for this, and now suddenly we're turning around and acting rather imperialistic, in my humble opinion, at the time. But I did find that clip regarding Syria. Okay. Just pay attention to what this is General Clark, Wesley Clark. Listen to what he says. This is quite some time ago.
About 10 days after 9/11, I went through the Pentagon and I saw Secretary Rumsfeld and Deputy Secretary Wolfowitz. I went downstairs just to say hello to some of the people on the Joint Staff who had used to work for me. And one of the generals called me and he said, "Sir, you got to come in. You got to come in and talk to me a second." I said, "Well, you're too busy." He said, "No." He says, "We've made the decision. We're going to war with Iraq." This was on or about the 20th of September. I said, "We're going to war with Iraq. Why?" He said, "I don't know." He said, "I guess they don't know what else to do." So I said, "Well, did they find some information connecting Saddam to al-Qaeda?" He said, no. He says, "There's nothing new that way. They just made the decision to go to war with Iraq." He said, "I guess it's like we don't know what to do about terrorists, but we've got a good military and we can take down governments." And he said, "I guess if the only tool you have is a hammer, every problem has to look like a nail." So I came back to see him a few weeks later, and by that time we were bombing in Afghanistan. I said, "Are we still going to war with Iraq?" And he said, "Oh, it's worse than that." He said, he reached over on his desk, he picked up a piece of paper, and he said, I just got this down from upstairs, meaning the Secretary of Defense's office today, and he said, "This is a memo that describes how we're going to take out 7 countries in 5 years. Starting with Iraq and then Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and finishing off Iran."
Really?
The truth is about the Middle East is, had there been no oil there, it would be like Africa. Nobody is threatening to intervene in Africa. The problem is the oil.
That's not wholly true. We are intervening in Africa.
It's
Africa.
A mess over there, too.
So, I mean,
you talk about Coptic Christians getting slaughtered. Oh, my God. That place is a mess.
And this goes back to 2001.
Okay, so when you're talking about the petrodollar, you're talking about the Saudi money and the oil, okay? And then we're jumping back and forth into illegal wars, and we're looking at the founders wanting foreign entanglement. What would this America look like if we could go back to that founding and we have, of course, and we kept that republic, as Ben Franklin used to say, and we then came to the place where we have this bazillion amounts of natural resources under our own feet and we didn't have to deal with these other people? This is what I'm saying to you. I don't understand
right.
It. And they've got big pharma, they've got the EPA, they've got all this garbage, and they're putting the iron fist falling on us on every turn, collecting rainwaters of sin. I mean, what the hell are we doing here?
I'll give you the answer, Linda. What's the answer? I figured it out this weekend. You know what the answer is? You know what the answer is? That? Because this president that we're having is going to destroy America, build up Africa, period. That's the answer.
No, he's just a part of it. Look, the guy hates this country. They're using him. They're using him.
Africa's going to be the key to the whole economy now. What do you think putting billions of dollars in a new water system there? Come on. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure that one out. They're destroying America so they can build up Africa. Simple as that. That's all it is.
No, that's what he wants to do because he's a black liberation theologist and a Marxist, a redistributor, and he hates colonialism, whatever. The guy's so screwed up, he doesn't know what the hell day it is. He's not that smart.
He's not. And he's very egotistical. But I think there's a couple of possibilities in the works. And, Robert, I think you're right. You know, Africa is part of the deal. And Doc hit the nail on the head. Africa will be the next battleground. I have some inside information that we have troops training right now in Mississippi.
Oh my God.
And the reason they're training in Mississippi is to get acclimated to the heat because they're fixing to go to Africa, folks.
Oh my God.
So you've got troops that are right now training to deploy to Africa. And the Chinese have been moving infrastructure into Africa. That is true. And I think that one of two things is going on here. Either, it's all one big plan, or you've got a group that has split off and they're giving them the finger. And the problem is that the group that is split off, giving them the finger, is a little bit bigger than Iran and Iraq. It's a little bit bigger than Saddam Hussein and the Ayatollah shithola over there in his turd box. Okay? It's bigger than the Syrians. So what you have is the BRICS countries. You've got Brazil,
right,
Russia, India,
China,
and South Africa.
That's it.
Okay.
Those are the ones.
So the battle is going to be over Africa, not the Middle East, because if the dollar is dead, then the oil in the Middle East doesn't mean crap.
Yeah, it doesn't. And what happens if there's a huge collapse in October, like is predicted by everybody on the planet lately, and we've got martial law going on over here because it's going to be a mess. I mean, who cares what's going on in Syria or...
Exactly. And again, that's why I was asking about it, because I guess I'm being a little jilted, but tomorrow is the future, and every one of us every day gets up and we work and we go through our daily routine for the future, right? Looking towards the future. Really? What the hell does your future look like? From where we sit right now, it doesn't look very promising, folks. So the point is, what the hell are we waiting for? And I am dead serious. I think that every single person listening to the sound of my voice should call every single radio host that they listen to, Glenn Beck, Sean Hannity, and all the rest of them, and ask them point blank, you say that you're against this. You say that you're against our involvement in Egypt. You say that you're against us being involved in Syria. You say you're against this. You say you're against that. Why do you keep supporting it then, sir? And they'll get indignant. I don't support that. Well, of course you do. You pay taxes to the government that's paying for it.
Why do you continue doing this? Barney Fife routine. Barney Fife gave Gomer a ticket for making a U-turn. Remember that program? And Barney Fife went to jail because he didn't want to tear up the ticket. So Gomer made a citizen's arrest against Barney for making a U-turn. Also, we can make a citizen's arrest.
Yeah, and if only that's the way the law really works, because, I mean, you know, but you make a valid point. It's not...
Citizen's arrest.
Right, you know, it's exactly. Try that on a local cop sometime, see what that gets you. Your ass will be tasered, pepper sprayed, and if you live through it, you'll be, you know, incarcerated, I can promise you. You'll be taken into custody. What the hell, how are you going to hold your government responsible? That's my point. And it doesn't involve picking up arms and going out in the street and trying to shoot everybody that looks like they are a government employee, because that's going to lead to suicide, certain death, period.
Yep.
That's not how you resolve it. But I tell you how we do resolve it, and that's by standing up and saying, you know what, I've had enough of this crap, and I'm not going to facilitate it anymore, and I'm not giving you a penny. You can take it and stick it. If you want it, come steal it from me like the thief that you are, but we need to stop facilitating this madness.
I think people are finally getting it, but, you know, it's not enough, and it's not, you know, it's not en masse like it should be.
2,700 MRAPs, really? And we're paying for that. You are paying for your own government to enslave you. You're paying for it.
You
get
what?
Up and
Here's
work for it every day. And you're thankful that you get the few damn table scraps left over so that you can buy food for your family.
There's the problem is, and you know this to be true, if you've looked at on the internet today at all, that they're too busy worrying about what team's going to win and what Miley Cyrus did that was so disgusting the other day. I mean, they do not see what's going on. They cannot connect the dots. I go through this on every single issue, every day. I scream about it. I tell them they can't read. I tell them, I'm at the point where I'm telling them, get off your derriere and stop being so illiterate. I do. I've had it. I get that PO'd. Local government, all of it. I tell them, you guys are stupid. You are marching to your own stupid boxcar. I tell them every day. I'm sick of it.
Well, you know,
I watched
just a brief snip of a program Sunday about on World War II when they were showing them rounding up the Jews in France.
Oh, my God.
And they're getting on the boxcars, and you see the arms sticking out, and they're waving. I'm like, what the hell are you waving for? Your ass is out of here. You're dead man. Well, I mean,
I know.
Really? And they just walk onto the trains. Are you insane?
Yep. They're
and
doing
that's
it
what
right
we're
now
doing,
in
folks.
This country.
That's what
exactly.
we're doing.
They're
that
doing
exactly
it with Agenda 21. I'm telling
every
you,
day,
every day I watch this.
Every day you get up and you get in that boxcar and you drive to the damn concentration camp.
And then,
you
they
hope,
go to these.
And you hope to God that on your way home you don't get stopped and they haul your ass in and put you in the shower and gas you. Because that's exactly what's going on.
That's where it's headed. And these people go to these meetings and they sit there and they champion this stuff. I was in shock. The next time I go, I'm not going to be as armed as I would be if I was at the shooting range. No, I'm not going to do that. But I will be armed with a lot of ammunition in my mind to combat this stuff. This is insane. I don't know how I'm going to do it yet, but I got to work on that because I need like flashcards or something because these people are so stupid. They don't understand. You know,
I'm
like,
going to give you. I'm going to give you a great example of justice in our current system. Back in 2010, when I started with Patriot Families, I was pretty well involved with my local government, and we had a gubernatorial race here in Georgia. And there was a guy that I was really leaning towards putting my support behind. And I got to tell you that I don't just willy-nilly endorse someone without knowing who they are and, you know, trying to do my due diligence. And we were at a campaign event here locally. And the guy's name was Ray McBerry. And at the time there had been just prior to, we'd been in a drought, and there was a big to-do over water rights in Georgia, all kinds of crap going on. Ray McBerry was saying all the right things. He was talking about a constitutional government. He was talking about the sovereignty of our state's rights. He was talking about returning us to a constitutional money in the state of Georgia. He was talking about, you know, the water here in Georgia. And, you know, he said men may have dug the hole, talking about Lake Lanier. He said, but God caused the rain to fall on the state of Georgia. And if the people in Florida or Tennessee want it, they're going to have to come take it. Anyway, at this event, I had the opportunity to talk with Mr. McBerry, but there was a nasty rumor that was circulating around that he had possibly had an inappropriate relationship with a 16-year-old girl who was in his church, because Mr. McBerry was also a youth counselor at his church.
Oh, my gosh.
And I looked him right in the eye, and I said, I've got to know, for me, is there any truth to it, Ray? I mean, is there anything behind it? He looked me dead in the eye, and he said, absolutely not, but I can't say any more than that right now. I thought, what the hell is that supposed to mean?
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, you know, if there's a doubt in my mind, then there's no way that I can endorse this man, and I didn't. Well, I just today learned that Mr. McBerry was successful in two lawsuits. One was against a website, swgapolitics.com. We have a site down here called the Peach Pundit. And the Peach Pundit is, you know, if you're anybody at all in politics in the state of Georgia, you're a member on Peach Pundit. It's kind of like Facebook for Georgia politics. And anyway, these two guys were one of them runs a newspaper. And so, I mean, they're very good journalists, or they have a way with words at the very least. So anyway, they had started this website, and they used the website to defame Ray Berry, McBerry. Well, they settled out of court. They didn't want to go before a jury. And Ray McBerry now owns that website.
Oh, my gosh.
They had to sign letters of confession, and they have to give him monetary restitution. In a separate case, he also won against the mother of the girl at the center of all of it. So the whole thing was crap.
Oh, my gosh.
And they did it because the man was polling amazingly high.
Oh, okay.
And Nathan Deal and the others, and there was like a seven-way race for governor. But McBerry was one of those guys. He was an outsider. He wasn't a politician. So here we are, some, you know, 3 years after the fact, and McBerry has justice. But what about the people of the state of Georgia? Where's our justice? Because we were deprived from what could have been an absolutely awesome constitutional governor. We were deprived.
Man. Yeah. Well, we were deprived twice from Ron Paul, and look where it's gotten us. And people were fighting. There was young people. There was, I mean, unbelievable amounts of people, even in California, were just loving this guy, and we couldn't get anywhere. And you saw firsthand. I know Mike from the hot seat saw firsthand what they did when they changed the rules. That, you know, they'll do anything to keep the status quo.
Oh, absolutely. They're changing the rules. That's funny. That, you know, as if the rules actually mattered in the first damn place.
Oh, my God.
But, you know, this is why I was so disenfranchised, and this is why I know that, and history, is how I know that the ballot box is not how you're going to change this. Granted, the ballot box is of use, but right now it's useless. It is useless.
Yeah, because
look at your Congress. I mean,
I know.
You got 535 members of Congress, and even after the 2010 midterm elections, what the hell did we get?
Nothing. They didn't do anything with it.
Two or three good ones, and the rest are milquetoast.
I know, absolutely. I've got, look, Mike Lee's been out championing. I know that Ted Cruz as well. I know that even Rand Paul, sort of. They're the only three in the Senate that I know that are trying to defund that stupid Obamacare. There's probably three or four, I know, good ones like Louis Gohmert and a couple others in the House who hate it and are trying everything they can, but they're outnumbered. It's like Custer's last stand. I mean, this is
absolutely
what's happening.
And you know what? I think that, you know, maybe Daryl Issa should be the one to bring up a motion, but we ought to hit them every day. There needs to be a motion every single day on the floor of the House of Representatives that every member of Congress who has a net worth of more than $1 million doesn't get paid. It's free. Pro bono.
There you go. There you go.
Pro
oh, my
bono.
God. That would
and
encompass Mr. Issa because he's a millionaire 435,000 times over.
No friggin'
oh
benefits.
God. It's ridiculous. Oh, I know. Absolutely.
See, the thing
it's
is,
not right.
The thing is, and that's what I was talking about earlier in the show, the idea of government wasn't that it was there for the people working in government to benefit from it.
It's on its
it
head.
Was
it's
never intended
down.
That you go and,
nope.
and work for government and you get
right.
some great benefit out of that. No. Working for government was the charitable
right.
thing to do
right.
because it benefited your fellow man, not yourself.
Right, and then you go back after a few years and you go back to your business or your house or your farm or whatever, and that was it. And, I mean, it was normal, but that didn't last very long, did it? Lincoln thought of that, the schmuck. I say we dig him up and put him back in the Ford Theater and find some more guns to shoot him with again.
If you want to have a properly sized government, you got to get money out of it. You got to take the money out of it. Because as long as it's profitable for all those bastards
yep.
to sit up there and
yep.
suck money out of your paycheck,
yep, they're not going
to
stop.
They're going to continue to do it. And as long as people continue to pay it, as long as people
yep.
continue to roll over, pull down their shorts and say, oh, it's that time of the month again. I mean, I'm dead serious. Do you realize?
I know.
You do realize that the average American gets up, well, not the average, those that are working and are above the poverty line, that 23% of us, okay, on average, we work 5 months out of the year
it's sick.
To pay the government.
Sick.
Another
it,
month
it
or so out of the year to pay our state government, and then the rest of the time is just for us. Except for, well, not really.
It's very sick, I know. I'm with you. I know what's happening. I understand. Again, until they're kicking in doors at 4 in the morning, they're not going to get it, Ron. I'm telling you, they're not. That's how stupid they are. Am I not seeing this correctly?
I think you're seeing it correctly.
Yeah, I mean, until they see that the iron fist of Stalin is on their faces, they're not going to wake up. They're not going to do anything about it. And then, let's face it, it's too damn late. I posted it today. I said, oh, my God, Vladimir Lenin would be so proud. Surprised, but very proud nonetheless. I mean, because back in Russia, they had to use guns to get them off those poor Kulak farms. Hello? They don't even use them anymore. These guys are – I've got a guy fighting in San Marcos against Agenda 21 every day. This guy's writing letters that are 3 pages long and some longer. He's doing everything he can. God bless him. People are slowly waking up, but I don't think it's quick enough. I mean, we got, what, a month and a half before this thing goes in the toilet?
We got a new caller on the line, 407. Who do we got?
My name's Nathan in Orlando. Sitting here listening to y'all. Hey, I'm listening to y'all's conversation, and I'm right there with you. But I'm going to tell you one of the biggest problems we have. We keep hearing the myth that you got to get involved at the local level, but that's not a myth or lie. See, the stronghold is at the top. Everything is, if you run for city council, okay, It's the parties that endorse you, stand on the stage, put money into
right.
your, and do commercials.
You're absolutely correct, Laura.
2009 proved that. We had more than 30,000 people running for offices across America in 2010, and the only thing that got reelected was the same Republicans. There was about a handful of people across the country that were citizen candidates that got elected. Alan West is the only one here in Florida. But you know, this is the thing, and people don't get this. We had 23 people running for Senate in Florida, and the only three people that you ever heard about was Rubio, Chris, and Mike Meeks. And then you know, and you couldn't scream against. So you know, the thing is we've been taught. Somebody said that American people are stupid. I disagree. Everybody has been educated. They've been educated in, you know, if you vote for me, you'll get these goodies. Now, the Republican Party has never given their goodies. They've always promised moral issues to conservatives, and they've never, not one time have they ever given their promise. And
no, they don't deliver.
No, they don't. So I agree with you guys. I agree with your fear that it might be over. It really might be over because it's just we're too far into tank to turn around. But I will never forgive the Republican Party. I will never vote for anybody running for as a Republican. In 2010, there was doctors across this country that were running for the health care issue, and they had something to offer. There's probably thousands of military people running because they knew what we needed in Washington, D.C. to win the war militarily. And you know what? The only thing that got reelected was these Republicans because they jumped in front of the Tea Party and started celebrating all these Republicans like Sarah Palin and Marco Rubio, which they should have. I wish, you know, first of all, Sarah Palin still needs to come clean on her record that Talk Radio never told us about, like her. And I'm not going to debate the issues. I just debate the consistency of the candidates and the politicians. But Sarah Palin is personally pro-life, but she's got pro-abortion bills that she signed, and she appointed a Planned Parenthood activist lawyer to the Supreme Court. She's got two sanctuary cities. She endorsed the UNC treaty. And in June of 2012, when Barack Obama gave 7 Alaskan islands to Russia, Hockey Mom wasn't on Fox trashing Obama. So you know what? The Republican Party is over. The Republican Party is over. The only option they got is to merge with the Democrats.
They already have.
So, but you guys are doing a good job, man.
I think they are absolutely merged with the damn Democrats, and I can guarantee you, having been on the ground level here in the state of Georgia, you know, I registered as a lobbyist down at the Capitol. I've seen both sides of these idiots. I've seen the ridiculousness at a state level of some of the crap that passes for law. But I sat in the committee hearings. I sat in the county conventions, our mass meetings, and our state convention. And I saw the shenanigans that went on there. And you're right. It's a good old boys network. And that's all it is, and that's all it's ever been, and that's all it's ever going to be. And the ballot box is not how we fix this. My God, we've had 235 years of voting, and it's not gotten fixed yet. So I don't know why we would.
I'm going to tell you why it hasn't got fixed, okay? Because we're not in a constitutional rule of law that with people participation. We're in a democracy. You got two parties that are fighting over who can get the most numbers. They're telling us, hey, you guys need to vote for us so we can get a majority. So they're playing a numbers game, and the problem with democracy is it's not a rule of law, but democracy always becomes a socialist and then a dictator type a government. You know, you know, so but they got us. They've trained the people in politics. Now we got in talk radio this thing, this campaign that Rush came up with, calling people low information voters. But when you start thinking like Republican radio, then you're a high information voter, and you know they're just flattering people. I know this much about the Constitution: there is no political parties or any hint of any kind of teams in the Constitution. There is no Electoral College in the Constitution. If you ever notice about the Electoral College, the Republicans have always been for it. The Democrats always want to do away with it. But the problem is, if you were to repeal that in the Constitution, for the first time, the Constitution would be inconsistent because there is no Electoral College. The problem with not the Constitution, but the minds and hearts of men. The Constitution is amazingly consistent, it's repetitive for the purpose of enforcing what wasn't enforced with another amendment, so it's redundant.
Wow.
You know?
Well, I don't believe they may not call it specifically by name, but they do talk about the electors in the state.
Electors is individuals. And if you go
I understand. And the Electoral College is individuals.
This is the thing. The electors in the Constitution is not a group that the government or the two parties put together and predetermine how they're going to vote based on some formula.
Oh, no, I agree. I agree with you there.
We vote for the president, we vote for the vice president, and then we vote for the electors who votes for the president and then votes for the vice president. And whoever has the most numbers wins. So that could be 20 people. On the day of election, we have only two people up there. And here's another question. The Electoral College, as we know it, why does it only serve the two major parties but not all the probably hundreds of parties and independents out there? So it's a rigged game. It's something.
And I can tell you why. Because the damn parties have gotten their crap passed as law, and I don't think a lot of people even realize that. The Democratic Party and the Republican Party in every state, the Republican Party rules are law in the state of Georgia.
And so
Democrat Party rules are law. They are codified as statutes in the state.
Yeah.
That is so far beyond the pale. It blows my mind. And I'm glad you brought it up because nobody ever talks about this.
Well, here's what the problem is. If you're in any party other than those two parties, you are a private group, a public group. But if you're in the Republican and Democrat Party, you are in a group that is a government institution. And the Republican, the Electoral College, the way we understand it, is a government institution. You're dealing with government, you know, the two parties are a part of the government. And the laws, you know, so it's not... That's what I'm saying. It's a democracy. It's not a constitutional rule of law, you know. But you know, the thing is, I'm gonna tell you, I think we're right. You might be right. It could be over, and I believe that 2010 might have been the last chance for the people to take their country back. But the Republicans, and especially the Republicans, proved they were too strong. Better politicians than the people, because most of the people got woke up for the first time, and many of them have gotten their education and learned more since then. But back when they woke up, most of the people were waking up because they lost their job. They're worried about their kids' future. Is their kids going to go to college? You know, that's what woke them up, not the politics. And they've learned a lot. They've learned the Constitution,
right.
But now they've learned that you got to either be on a Republican or Democrat party to be able to participate.
What was your name, sir?
Nathan.
Nathan, welcome so much. And what city or area are you in?
I'm in Orlando, Florida.
Cool.
I was sitting here listening to you guys, man, and I just had to say, I got to call in and say I agree with you. You're doing great.
Welcome. Come to our website.
What do you do for the plantation, Nathan?
What do you mean, the plantation?
The federal plantation.
I work for a living. I work for a living. I work to support the government. Last week my paycheck was so small I didn't even make enough money to support the government. It was messed up. But anyway, I drive a gas tanker hauling gas and jet fuel here locally in Central Florida. That's what I do.
Wow.
And I love my job.
Hey, Bill, somebody type in www.patriotfamilies for this channel.
He put it up there. It's up there.
Okay.
Robert, the other fellow that's on the phone with us, he is down in Venice, Florida.
Sarasota?
Yeah,
Sarasota, Venice,
County, Florida.
Yeah, I know the area. I get down there on occasion once in a while. I go, like a couple months ago,
cool.
I went over to Tampa and did work in that area.
Well, you know, one of the things that I find ironic, and I think, you know, you talk about the education, and I really believe that's the key to everything, is people getting educated, because I think if people really, truly understood the truth, the reality, they'd be really pissed off. And,
yep.
You know, the idea that we've had a constitutional republic, it's been such a BS snow job that we've been sold. This country
right.
has not been a constitutional republic since the Lincoln administration.
Yeah.
And I don't think most people realize that. And God forbid
That's
you
right,
say
Ron.
Anything about Abraham Lincoln, you're a racist.
Do you know, Ron, do you know who knows that, though? Seriously?
Oh, Obama knows
it. No, I mean, the other person that you kind of admire, and I do too, and he actually didn't even go into it with Glenn Beck, because Glenn Beck's got his head up his ass on this subject, and that's Andrew Napolitano. He absolutely understands how bad Lincoln was, and he knows why.
Sure he does. Look,
yep.
My God, the man had 13,000 American citizens incarcerated through military tribunals. He was a freaking dictator. Even
yep.
historians that are glowing for Lincoln will admit readily that he was, you know, our first democratically
uh-huh.
elected dictator. The guy was
yep.
a piece of crap, and he destroyed whatever
yes, he did.
Remnants of the idea of America
of what
were
Ben
remaining.
Franklin gave us. Absolutely.
Absolutely. Yep. And I just find it ironic that, you know, Lincoln was the Republican of the day. That was the dawn of the Republican Party
uh-huh.
from the old Whig Party. And it is under the Republicans that we first began voter registration in the South, in the Southern, in the five military districts of the South after the end of the War of Northern Aggression. And now today, when the Republicans mention voter registration, it's the Democrats that get their panties in a bunch. But it was initially designed, it was
uh-huh.
initially implemented to disenfranchise Southern voters.
My God. Sure.
Anyone who had given aid and assistance to the rebellion, you weren't allowed to vote, but the newly freed slaves were allowed to vote, and they brought in military officers who ran for public office.
Wow.
Yes, the War of Northern Aggression. I absolutely did say that, Doc, and I'll repeat it because that's exactly what it is and what it was. Abraham Lincoln did the exact same thing with Fort Sumter as Roosevelt did with the Japanese in Pearl Harbor.
Yes.
He boxed
yes, he
the
did.
South into a corner where they had no choice but to fire, and he knew it. He
yep.
knew it, and it was done intentionally with malice aforethought for the exact same reason that Roosevelt wanted Japan to draw first blood. Because
there you go.
Then we could claim to be the defenders and, well, he hit me first.
Oh, my God.
You know, Amen. And the thing is, you can't talk about actual U.S. history without being accused of being a sympathizer of Adolf Hitler or wanting to return to the days of slavery. And that's all a bunch of crap. The reality of the War of Northern Aggression, it had everything to do with commerce and taxation and
yes.
nothing to do with slavery.
Slavery was on its way out anyway.
Slavery was a hot-button issue, like abortion, and it was a way
exactly.
to get more
and
behind the idea. Do you realize that what happened was, I believe it was April 1st, 1861, Lincoln called a cabinet meeting with the idea of resupplying Fort Sumner. Okay? Now, Major Anderson, who was at Fort Sumner, had already cabled and said, no, we've got plenty of provisions, and he was on good terms with the mayor in Charleston, so every day he would send some troops into town and they would get fresh meat and provisions and take them back to the fort. There was no aggression. There was no animosity. So Lincoln has this cabinet meeting, and he asks his cabinet members, what do you think about this plan to resupply Fort Sumner? All but one man said, absolutely not. If we do this, it will cause a war. We will go into a civil war, and nobody wants that. There's no sense. Think of all the senseless loss of life, you know, and we don't want to fight brother against brother. No way that this should be done. 2 weeks later, 2 weeks later, Lincoln assembles his cabinet and asks the question again, and they all said, absolutely, how could we not resupply the fort? My God. And if it results in war, so be it. If that's what the South wants, then that's what they should have. Now, what happened? Well, what happened in those 2 weeks for all those cabinet members to change their mind?
They didn't want to lose their money.
There you go. There was a bill before Congress, right, that hadn't been voted on yet in April 1st. And it was a new tariff act that was going to institute a 47% tariff on imported goods.
The question is, how much money did they pocket it then?
So from the time of the first cabinet meeting to the time of the second cabinet meeting, guess what happened? It passed and was signed into law. So what that means is, if you were in New York and you were a merchant who imported goods or sold your own goods, you now recognize that Charleston, who was a big port, because they had seceded, they weren't bound by this new tariff. So any goods coming into the eastern ports on the northern section were going to be 47% higher than they were in the southern ports.
Oh, my gosh.
Now, who would buy goods in New York when you could go to New Orleans and get it for 47% less? Well, by God, if they want a war, we'll give them a war.
So this is all going back to the money and the greed and the BS. Because,
always has been.
Yes.
It's not about honor. It's not about freedom. It's not about any of that crap.
I know. And when you look at it, the reality of it, even though Frederick Douglass was supposedly a friend of Abraham Lincoln's, he was a freed man. People were being freed all the time. Slavery was on its way out. People were educating themselves. There were people breaking laws left and right, educating the slaves. You know, so this was on its way out. This was a lot told to the people throughout history about this, that this was about slavery. So,
when you read the Three-Fifths Clause, okay, why was that in there? It
because
wasn't the southern states that lobbied to have that in there. That was the northern states.
That
was a compromise because, you know, the South said, hey, we should be able to count all our people. And they said, oh, no, you can't count your slaves. They're not people. Well, wait a minute.
They're considered property.
So they come up with a Three-Fifths Compromise, but to hear everyone else tell it, oh, it's racist, you know, they only considered a black man three-fifths a person. Well, that's nowhere near the truth.
No.
It had to do with the amount of
property.
Representation in Congress.
Exactly. I know. It's just semantics.
And the representation in Congress had to do with who had the most to gain,
right?
Because we couldn't have the South, which was largely agricultural, we couldn't have them on dead even equal footing in Congress with the North, which is where all the money was, after all. That's where all the merchants were at, and the mercantilism that Lincoln so desired, that Hamilton pined about, that Henry Clay wanted to bring about. It was all about mercantilism, which in today's language is fascism. There's no other way to call it. It's
exactly
the marriage of corporation
and
government.
Yep. Yeah, it's public. Exactly.
And what were they fighting about? What product? What commodity?
It was commerce.
Money.
And tariffs.
What cultivating product that they were fighting over.
It was rice or tobacco or cotton. I mean, you could come up with, but the fact of the
anything.
Matter is, it was about money.
It was cotton. That whole deal was cotton.
Didn't they have? I mean, no. Wait a minute. When you're dealing with trade and commerce routes, isn't it about any product that was done?
Absolutely,
sold, bought?
It is.
The South
was raising cotton, but the English,
right.
You know, imported cotton, but most of that came from Egypt. But the fact of the matter was that in the South, you didn't have these huge manufacturing facilities. You got to understand, this was at the height of the Industrial Revolution,
right.
And all
right.
The manufacturing was done in the North. There was very little
in
manufacturing done in the South. The South was
right.
agrarian, so they grew the raw materials and sold them to the North, and then bought them back in products. But the problem
mm-hmm.
was that with the protectionary tariffs that government was putting on imported goods, it increased the price, Robert, of your shirts and everything else.
Right.
Oh, no.
So,
no.
Because
they knew, you know, the South knew they could buy those same products from merchants coming into their harbor at less than what the New York merchants were getting or the North Carolina merchants were getting for the exact same product. It cost them 30 cents more, you know, or 30%
yep.
more. So,
well,
in effect, what you were doing was putting what you were doing was taking and exporting cotton out of Savannah Harbor and landing it back on the shore up north for the same money, and then exporting products off the New York Harbor into Savannah Harbor, and it suddenly wasn't taxed another 30%. That's not how it functioned in practice, but for all practical purposes, that's what was happening.
So my question is, okay, when they first did the Commerce Clause, was not the original intent to eliminate this type of a problem?
Well,
that
sure.
But
that was only on interstate commerce, the commerce between, you know, New York
right.
and Georgia, right? There wasn't supposed to be any of these tariffs, and there weren't.
Right.
The tariffs were only on imported products.
Oh.
Well, guess what? If you're not manufacturing product,
you're
manufacturing is raw goods, right?
Right.
Then you've got two choices. You can buy from the guy that's manufacturing up in New York.
Right.
Or his competitor, who might be English or Spanish or, you know,
mm-hmm.
Portuguese. But now suddenly you have to pay an extra 47% to the Portuguese guy, or the Spanish guy, or the English guy, to make it equal to the guy in New York, so he's able to charge you higher prices. So, in effect, it's a tax on you.
Uh-huh.
No matter how you slice it, because now the New York guy can charge a higher price for his goods than he could prior to the tariff.
Wow. Oy vey.
So you're, in effect, putting this huge tax on these people. And they know you need goods.
Yeah.
And guess what? Well, screw you. We won't pay you that much for your cotton. Oh,
yeah.
If you're going to export it, there's a tariff on that. So
time
they
for
had
a
them coming and going.
I don't care.
They had them coming and going, and it was purely economical. It was purely a commercial venture. Plain and simple. Slavery was just that tug at your heartstrings issue to stir up the people up in the North. I'm not saying that slavery was good. I think it was horrible. It was deplorable. And the idea that another human being can own a human being
absolutely
is despicable. But nonetheless,
it was the emotional progressive ideology of the day.
it really was.
Oh, my God. Wow. Schmucks. Yeah, we get played every minute, don't we?
Yeah, I mean, you know, and it's no different. We did the same thing in World War One. We did
mm-hmm.
the same thing in World War Two. And when I say the same thing, what I mean is that in the Civil War, in World War One, in World War Two,
Mm-hmm.
Our president lied, misled the
yep.
public, and had ulterior motives for taking us into a foreign conflict.
Sure.
None
and
of
it hasn't
which,
changed.
None of which, not a single damn one of those conflicts or
mm-hmm.
conflagration of war had
yep.
a damn thing to do with the sovereignty or the liberty or the
of
freedom of the American people. And
right.
every single time we went to war, we diminished those freedoms a little more.
You're damn right we did. I mean, it's just one big, huge hodgepodge of BS. No, you're right. And look at the false flags. Look how they've resulted with the Patriot Act after 9/11. I mean, we can go all the way back to the Civil and or the War of 1812 and the monetary situation. I mean, this country
that,
was broke after that.
And,
no wonder they could get their way with this centralized banking nonsense.
The methodology or the reasoning, the logic behind the lying and obfuscation
right.
is the same in all three cases.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
They wanted a majority consent. They didn't want to prosecute a war that was unpopular, that the people wouldn't
right.
support.
Right.
They wanted your support. So they set about selling you on the idea of war. And the best way to do that is Pearl Harbor. Just like in that damn PNAC document from 99, the Project for a New American Century with Wolfowitz mm-hmm. and those other scumbags and Dick Cheney.
Right.
When
oh,
they
yeah.
were talking about our defenses because the progressive Democrats had so weakened us, mm-hmm. which is why, that must be why Bush and company ran around buying up all these various defense contractor stocks through the Carlyle Group, because they knew that sooner or later war was going to become profitable again, right? And so
oh,
in this
God.
PNAC document, they said that we had so weakened our defenses in the United States that absent a Pearl Harbor-type event, it would
yep.
take a decade or more. And lo and behold, not long after that, we had our Pearl Harbor-type event in 9/11.
Yes, we did. Yes, we did. And they got their Patriot Act.
I heard something else the other day that made me so frickin' pissed off, I couldn't even think straight. And that was on one of my radio shows, programs that I listen to on Patriot on Sirius Satellite Radio.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote it down, and I, God forbid, I probably don't have it in my wallet anymore. But it's a group online that you can send money to help outfit our troops, because it seems they're being sent into theater without all the proper equipment and gear. Things as simple as, oh, I don't know, a helmet, goggles, body armor, right? And they had a young man on there that was talking about being stationed over in Afghanistan and when he was shipping out. And they told him, well, you know, you can buy it here at the PX for $600 or whatever it was for the stuff he needed. And he told his CO, he said, I don't have that kind of money. He said, well, you know, you could, when you get over there, just kind of scrounge around and see what you can find.
Oh, my gosh.
No, so it's one thing, you know, to lead us into this bullcrap conflicts overseas on false pretenses
right.
with a commercial agenda behind it from God knows whom,
mm-hmm.
right? So it's one thing to send our guys off to fight and die for some BS, but it's another thing
right.
to send them out, you know, tennis shoes and gym shorts with a friggin' slingshot.
I know.
Say, go get them, boys. Maybe pick one up, you know, if you find a gun laying around. Not that they're literally doing that, but, I mean, you know, close enough, for God's sakes.
Well, no, they have to have all the money so they can arm the DHS and the local sheriffs to come after us.
I mean, if you're going to use the boys as pawns, for God's sakes, at least equip them properly, would you?
I'm surprised anybody's still there. I'm surprised anyone ever enlisting anymore. I don't know. Are they not paying attention? God bless these kids, but I don't know.
Ron.
Yes, Robert.
Should I send him my towel and my six gun?
I think you should. I'd leave the yarmulke out, though. I wouldn't send that. That could get him hurt.
Sprinkle the dot in the eyes and cross it. Can you not?
You know, if they're Bradley Manning, you could send them a black 36 C cup, though.
Wow! Let me tell you, Linda. I went to California. I never was so humiliated flying and landing in L.A. and Phoenix. Let me tell you something. The TSA was having a good time, bro. I said, I hope this is good for you as it does for me. And when I said that, the whole line was cracking up, and I had the whole line with stitches.
I hope you're having a good time
at my expense. Yeah. They touched my testicles, man. I felt so violent. I felt raped.
They're disgusting. You know, as far as I'm concerned with the, you know how I feel about the TSA, Ron, because I've been through it so many times, trying to get back to Indiana.
Just go through the line with some soap on a rope.
Oh God!
Don't worry, I got soap on a rope, guy. No, we're not going there again. You gotta laugh at it. I don't know why in the hell anybody flies anymore. Absolutely.
No, I'm not doing it. I have told Rod Luke several times on the air from both of my shows on Tuesdays and Wednesdays. I'm dragging him out of his house if we're going anywhere to Indiana or Georgia or wherever we're going to meet. He's helping me drive. I am not going through it again because it's just too much. They're crazy.
Oh, man. No,
stop doing
no.
it.
I'm not flying again, Linda. I'm not flying again.
I won't do it.
I did a California trip the whole week, and I'm still jet lagging.
I
was going to download a new intro. It's about six minutes long, and it's all the words the NSA doesn't want you to say.
Ooh, good.
Backpack,
White House.
Hand grenade, bomb, assassination.
Impeachment. Yeah, there you go.
Patriot,
so what you need, instead of the soap on a rope, you just get one of those little ropes and put it around your neck, and instead of putting the little soap on the end of it, just put one of those travel-sized little jars of Vaseline because you're going to need it whether you want to use it or not. Might as well get ready.
Oh, my God. That was a tough trip. I swear to God. I don't know how you live there.
Believe me. That's why no wonder I need to have a specialist. I'm a mess already.
I've been to California twice, okay? I thought it was Linda's imagination. It ain't Linda's imagination. She's telling the whole truth, nothing but
it's a mess.
So help her, God. I swear to God, she is not lying. They're all socialist bastards out there.
In the words of one of my gay friends on one of our tours, I'm a rag already. Jesus, thank God.
I don't blame you, Linda. I'd be the same way you are right now. So I had a week of it.
I got very lucky, you know, when we flew down to New Orleans for the Harley deal. I don't know. I guess I have a look. You know, I can I can look at somebody and they just avoid me like the plague.
Good.
And when I was in line, you know, take the friggin' shoes off, throw this crap in here. So I throw it in there and throw it on the belt, and the guy looks at me and he goes, "You can go around." And waved me around the damn scanner thing and all that. So all I did was walk through the metal detector thing.
Good for you.
And went right by, and I'm like, you know, that's probably a good thing because I was fixing to get indignant. I'm pissed to take my shoes off. Are you kidding me? It's ridiculous.
Oh, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, really.
It is. It's disgusting. It's beyond. I mean, you know, every time I listen to some of these pundits and I listen to the conversations on the Blaze, I'm like, do you guys hear your own conversation? Do you hear what you're saying to each other? I mean, can you even envision Ben Franklin listening to this without absolutely going ballistic? I can't believe the conversations that we're having. I can't. They would have muskets, tars and feathers, and ropes right now. I'm serious.
Patrick Henry would be building a moat, saying, "Look, I tried to tell you guys what I don't know what the hell you're waiting for because
oh my God,
that's for you.
Are you kidding
that
me?
Stuff out there
he
is
would
for
be,
you.
He would be building his own tank and Gatling gun. Oh my God. Oh hell no.
The good news is that LA hates Biden and Obama because I was in a store. And there was a bumper sticker that said, Obama, plumber, Biden, fitter.
I don't know what that means,
I don't know what and I said to the security guard at the store, I said, does that mean you like Obama and Biden? Oh, no, we can't stand them.
Good.
They can't.
Yeah, I'm in California. They're still wearing the first Black American president shirts out here. So, you know, no wonder, like I said, I had blood work done. I'm surprised I should have had a transfusion after that deal. But I want to thank you guys for doing the show today. Ron, it was great, absolutely amazing. And I know you're running out of time. And Robert, it was great to hear from you. You guys, blessings
absolutely.
In the chat room. And I'm going to go back in the chat room. Okay, yeah, absolutely, guys. God bless.
God bless you. And Robert, any final thoughts, sir?
Sir, I just don't know how to prepare now. I don't know what to do. I don't know how to prepare. I don't know what to do yet. So we kind of have a program on that, I guess, again.
Well, I can tell you what to do, and it's right here.
I don't have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression. Everybody's out of work or scared of losing their job. The dollar buys a nickel's worth. Banks are going bust. Shopkeepers keep a gun under the counter. Punks are running wild in the street. And there's nobody anywhere who seems to know what to do, and there's no end to it. We know the air is unfit to breathe, and our food is unfit to eat. We sit watching our TVs while some local newscaster tells us that today we had 15 homicides and 63 violent crimes, as if that's the way it's supposed to be. We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. It's like everything everywhere is going crazy, so we don't go out anymore. We sit in the house, and slowly the world we're living in is getting smaller, and all we say is, please, at least leave us alone in our living rooms. Let me have my toaster and my TV and my steel-belted radios, and I won't say anything. Just leave us alone. Well, I'm not going to leave you alone. I want you to get mad. I don't want you to protest, I don't want you to riot, I don't want you to write to your congressman because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. I don't know what to do about the depression and the inflation and the Russians and the crime in the street. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value.
Mr. Speaker, here's the latest reality game. Let's play Wall Street bailout. Rule one, rush the decision. Time the game to fall in the week before Congress is set to adjourn and just 6 weeks before an historic election so your opponents will be preoccupied, pressured, distracted, and in a hurry. Rule two, disarm the public through fear. Warn that the entire global financial system will collapse and the world will fall into another Great Depression. Control the media enough to ensure that the public will not notice that this bailout will indebt them for generations, taking them from trillions of dollars, taking from them trillions of dollars they earned and deserve to keep. Rule three, Control the playing field and set the rules. Hide from the public and most of the Congress just who is arranging this deal. Communicate with the public through leaks to media insiders. Limit any open congressional hearings. Communicate with Congress via private teleconferencing calls. Heighten political anxiety by contacting each political party separately. Treat members of Congress condescendingly, telling them that the matter is so complex that they must rely on those few insiders who really do know what's going on. Rule 4, divert attention and keep people confused. Manage the news cycle so Congress and the public have no time to examine who destroyed the prudent banking system that served America so well for 60 years after the financial meltdown of the 1920s. Rule 5, always keep in mind the goal is to privatize gains to a few and socialize losses to the many. For 30 years, in one financial scandal after another, Wall Street game masters have kept billions of dollars of their gains and shifted their losses to American taxpayers. Once this bailout is in place, the greed game will begin again. But I have a counter game. It's called Wall Street Reckoning. Congress shouldn't go home to campaign. It should put America's accounts in order. To Wall Street insiders, it says no on behalf of the American people. You have perpetrated the greatest financial crime ever on this American republic. You think you can get by with it because you are extraordinarily wealthy and the largest contributors to both presidential and congressional campaigns in both major parties. But you are about to be brought under firm control. First, America doesn't need to bail you out. It needs to secure the real assets and property, not your paper. That means the homes and properties of hardworking Americans who are about to lose their homes because of your mortgage greed. There should be a new job for regional Federal Reserve banks. We want no home foreclosed if a serious workout agreement can be put into place. And if you don't do it, we want a notarized statement by a Federal Reserve official that they tried and failed. Second, taxpayers should directly gain any equity benefits that may flow from this historic bailout. We want the American people to get first priority in taking ownership of the institutions that want to pass their toxic paper on to the taxpayers. Third, before any bailout for Wall Street, America needs major job creation to rebuild our national infrastructure. America needs assets, not paper. We need working assets. Fourth, the time for real financial regulatory change is now, not next year. A modernized Glass-Steagall Act must be put in place. We need to reestablish locally owned community savings banks across this country and create within the Justice Department a fully funded unit to prosecute every single high-flying thief whose fraud and criminal acts created this debacle and then forced their disgorgement of assets going back 15 years. Fifth, any refinancing must return a major share of profits to a new Social Security and Medicare lockbox where the monies can go to pay for a dignified and assured retirement for every American. This member isn't voting for a penny of it. Those who created and profited from this game of gains must be brought to justice. The assets they stole must be returned to the American taxpayers right down to the tires on their Mercedes. Mr. Speaker, I ask my colleagues to join me in co-sponsoring my bill to create an independent commission to investigate these well-heeled wrongdoers. Real reform now or nothing.
So, I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore! I want you to get up right now Get up, go to your windows, open them and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell and I'm not going to take this anymore. Things have got to change.
How many stations does this go
out? You've got to get mad. You've got to say,
I know it was to Louisville and Atlanta.
We're not going to take this anymore. Then we'll figure out what to do about the depression and the inflation and the oil crisis. But first, get up out of your chair, open the window, stick your head out and